Today is Thursday, October 12th, 2017. Yes, just 1 week from my birthday. This is John Williams. It's 11:13 in the morning, and this is The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios at WGN Radio. If you think this is swell stuff, listen to me weekdays from 1 to 3 on WGN Radio with some of these very voices.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Happy birthday, John.
Kim Gordon with WGN Radio News. Happy birthday, John.
Don't expect it.
I'm Scott Standis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the Prickly City comic strip and also the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus. And John, I didn't get you a card.
Well, you've got a week, Eric.
A week. I'm Eric Zorn. I'm the unraveling columnist from the Tribune. I appear Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays in your newspaper.
Why are you unraveling?
Oh, just because Trump is unraveling. I didn't want him to feel alone.
Oh my gosh, those stories are amazing.
The story of Vanity Fair out of the White House.
I have not read that yet. I've only heard about it. But I've heard about so many stories this week, to say nothing of the Harvey Weinstein stuff, that it's going to be hard to catch up. But we will, and we will do the Weinstein story at the end of this podcast. We'll give it its due, and maybe the president as well. But I want to start with a few local topics. After passing a sweet beverage tax just a few weeks ago, only one county commissioner voted for it again this week. The unpopular, what's the matter?
Was it one or two?
I think two voted against it.
One in committee and two in the final.
No, Jerry Butler and Suffredin both voted yesterday.
But there were two. I thought it went down like 15 to 1 or something.
And that was in the committee.
Yeah, in committee, it went down with one.
Because
Butler wasn't there, and then Butler showed up.
Okay. It
was
swamped. Two. Two.
Two voted against.
For it.
So it was closer than you thought.
The unpopular soda tax fizzled. But what a titanic shift. My question to you guys is, what happened, and how do we characterize these politicians who changed their vote? Were they responsive, or are they just cowards and weak? Eric, you go first.
Well, I think they probably didn't think through this whole – I mean, the whole tax was not well thought through, I think. And I mean, the basic idea – I've said this before. I think the basic idea is okay to add an extra luxury tax or sin tax to these sugary drinks, but the tax was too high.
If they cut it in half, would you have been okay with it?
I wouldn't have been okay with the way it was applied to so many different kinds of beverages.
Right.
Could they have applied it just to sugary
– Sure. That's how it's done, I believe, in Berkeley.
Okay.
Philadelphia has one too as well.
I think Philadelphia covers. I'm not sure which ones would, but yeah, it could have been done. They could have just had a sugar.
So these
it was too high. Also, we have a tax. Chicago already. People don't even know this. We have a 3% soda tax, soft drink tax. We've had since the mid 90s in Chicago, and that went. I mean, there was a little bit of a fuss at the time, but not nearly what we have here because it was 3%. It's small. We got a 5 cent a bottle or 7 cents a bottle tax on bottled water, and 5 cents I think it is on bottled water. So these taxes are out there. I think this one was so high. And it was so poorly rolled out, so that it didn't really stand a chance once the public got a hold of it and started raising
it. It was confusing.
And we finally got a hold. We finally saw through this gauze of BS that said that this was for our health, which is, of course, finally Preckwinkle comes forward and says, you know, just leading up to the vote when she had her, you know, pre-vote hissy fit.
Okay, you're going to regret that.
Am I?
I think so. Go ahead.
Why, okay. Is that sexist?
Hissy fit?
Well, you can't say hissy fit.
You can't say hissy fit?
I don't think you can say it.
Every now and then the tide shifts on certain words and phrases.
I am going to say that saying hissy fit referring to a woman is ill-advised.
That does not rub me the wrong way.
Thank you.
She's an extraordinary woman.
Sorry. Hissy fit does not bother me.
Okay. So anyway, talking about and admitted openly that this had absolutely nothing to do with our health. Everything to do with raising revenues. Everything.
Well, wait a minute. It does have a little to do with our health.
I mean, even if it's tangential.
That's not the reason it was not absolutely. According to the person who pushed it the hardest, it had nothing to do with it. In fact, it was all about the revenue.
Well, I heard her this on WGN after the vote, and she said, you know, look, we needed the revenue, and we found a way to do the revenue that also had a health implication or a health impact, right?
Well, would it have satisfied anybody if they'd been more transparent about that? Said, yeah, it'll be good for your health, but we need the money.
Well, she said it all along. She said, look, government needs to be funded. They always said they needed this money, and that this was a way to get the money and to maybe have an impact on health too.
You know how you make a budget better is you don't give away the store every time every union you negotiated with, you gave them the sweetheart contracts, which is exactly what's led us to this sad state of affairs.
Yeah, but this is about, Kim, have you bought any soda or sweet beverages?
Well, I think what has caused the outrage is that once the tax actually went into effect and people started realizing that they were not charged a tax for a Frappuccino, and then you came out of a store and you bought a club soda and then you have a tax, it was so confusing. People couldn't figure it out. And I think the outrage, you know, took place once it went into effect and it finally really affected you. You're like, yeah, whatever. But then you see how unfair it was and how, from the health standpoint, like you guys were saying, it really didn't make sense because a Frappuccino is probably worse and more fattening than a regular Coke. But you're not getting charged tax for that, but you're going to get, you know, taxed for a bottle of Coke.
You would get taxed for it if you bought it in a bottle, but if you bought it—
Right, but if you walked into Starbucks and got it, right.
Yeah. By the way, hissy fit, if it's related to the word hysterical, I know this is not the important news of the day, but if it is connected, if hissy comes from hysterical, then it is arguably sexist.
Yeah, but
sexist.
It sounds like sissy.
I think that's not good either.
I think we follow up on this next week after we've had a chance to consult our dictionary.
You know, we need to find, first of all, some more easily offended women than Kim.
No, but I do think here's another word. Here is another word whose, I think, appropriate use makes people blanch these days, and it shouldn't, only because of the way it sounds, niggardly. People hear that word, and they go, I don't know if you should say that. That's a word. It has a meaning. It can be used in casual conversation. But the sound of that word is off-putting to people.
I wouldn't use it in casual conversation for the reason that you said. I mean, it's not related to the ethnic slur at all. There's no linguistic connection to it. But
what's the definition so the listeners can—
Cheap, no. Miserly.
But it does make your heart skip a beat. When you
doesn't
hear
it? You say, yes. Squeeze me. You couldn't have said cheap or miserly. Right. Wouldn't have that helped?
That popped up politically about, gosh, I'm trying to think of George H.W.
It was a while ago. But yes, somebody lost their job over it or
well,
something.
Well, remember, and Sarah Palin used the phrase tar babies once upon a time.
Well, that.
Come on.
But I think a lot of us have never even heard of that phrase. I was unfamiliar with the history of that because I was unfamiliar with that phrase until she used it. And then I had to look it up and thought, if you knew that word or phrase, why in the world did you use it?
Well,
you
must know. I just did a column a couple weeks ago about the word dotard, D-O-T-A-R-D, which refers to basically a senile old person. It is not at all related to the word retard.
Right.
Which is not
I pronounced it dotard.
Dotard.
I pronounced it dotard at first, as in retard.
Right. But it's not connected to that word at all. But it sounds like it, so it's maybe a word that you might want to avoid.
Well, but
especially if you're going to
I think we had
it.
A conversation about this, didn't you and I? How did the word dotard pop up?
It was when Kim Jong-un.
Sure, but I mean, the point is, where did they come up with that? Because you've got to believe that when Kim Jong-un said it, he didn't say it English. He said it in Korean. They looked up that
word.
Yes,
is it a Babelfish translation?
Right, is dotard popping up in somebody's dictionary?
Someone using a comprehensive U.S.-Korean dictionary from about 1945.
They've got to drop dotard out of there because we don't even know what that means.
Last one in. Yeah.
Is that where the word doddering comes from, by the way?
We're now going to a new topic.
Are you ready?
Okay. Is it entomology or etymology?
Next on Language Talk.
Since his campaign days, President Trump has consistently described a Chicago cop who he says could solve our crime problem. The speed with which this mystery cop could fix the problem has gone in various versions of Trump telling it from a week to 2 days to now immediately. That it is now immediately is somehow a news story, as if the president were caught in another fabrication. Now, I think if the story is true or apocryphal, it really doesn't matter. We all know what the president is saying. He's heard from frustrated cops that are telling him it's too easy for the criminals or suspected criminals. They need to be able to crack down more. I don't think we need to call the president a liar because it's now immediate. And I also think this, maybe this isn't fake news. This is distracting news. We don't need to be focused on Trump and the pursuit of the mystery cop.
Why don't we need to call the president a liar?
I guess you can. Sure. At it.
I will.
You don't know.
John, your issue is that first time he said it, he could do it in a month. Then he said he can do it a day. Today he said we could fix the problem immediately. So you think that's why people are jumping on him because he switched it to immediately.
I think, that's the headline in one of the stories of the Tribune today.
I don't think it ever happened anyway.
But I mean, did you ever think that President Trump really talked to a Chicago cop who said we could fix it in a day? And even if you did, I mean, who cares? I probably will tell the president I could fix it in a day, but
there's no meaning
to any of this.
I'd like to know who the cop is. If he actually exists and he actually had an idea that could solve this problem.
The president said he gave the name to the mayor.
Well, the idea, Scott, obviously the idea here is
is
to ignore constitutional safeguards and mandates. I mean, that's what they're talking about. They're talking about about, I think. I mean, what else could solve this problem in a day other than, you know,
crack some heads,
incredibly unconstitutional. And our president has very little regard for the Constitution.
You said the president gave the name to the mayor?
He says he passed the name along to Mayor Emanuel, and Emanuel's people continue to say that never happened.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, they put out a statement after this latest one saying, please give us the name.
Okay, but really, we're missing the point. That's my problem. This part of the conversation misses the point.
There is no point. John, he doesn't have an idea. He doesn't have an idea. There's nobody who has an idea.
The whole point is that he makes that it's a lie and that he's making something up to placate his people.
I'm not interested in this one. I mean, really, you've only got so much space, time on a show, time in a newscast. I don't think this one deserves the time and attention.
Well, let's go back to discussing the word
right.
What are your thoughts about this?
You think it just has to do with the fact that here he goes again, just, you know, coming down on Chicago, always picking on Chicago?
And it's easy for him, sure.
Right. So, I mean, this is just another way to do that. It's just another roundabout way.
It's another easy way to answer a question he doesn't have an answer for.
Sure, but I mean, and nobody does. I mean, really, what is the fix to – does anybody here know what the fix to crime is in Chicago? The chief of police doesn't. The mayor doesn't. Nobody does.
To throw away the Constitution and go and search everybody's homes and put wiretaps on everybody's phones.
Sure, that's his idea.
And instead of stop and frisk, just stop and arrest people who you don't think they look like they might be in gangs and lock them all up. That's the solution, but it's not constitutional. It's not in America. We don't
do that. President is having a lot of trouble with the Constitution or safeguards for suspected criminals or journalists who say things that are either true and unflattering or are inaccurate as they try to do their best work. You know, sometimes they get it wrong. The president wants to actually suspend the license or put in jeopardy the license
of a network,
NBC.
Which they don't have.
I noticed that they sort of massage that. You can't suspend the license for NBC. The stations are licensed. Now they say, well, we'll suspend all the NBC licenses because they're NBC. I mean, of course that makes no sense.
That sounds constitutional, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, licenses are renewed, but the president isn't in charge of the FCC. I mean, you know, he doesn't make those decisions. The FCC does. And I don't think people are complaining to the network the way the president is.
This is authoritarian rhetoric.
It really is.
It's very scary. It honestly is.
And I'm not.
That's what they do, right? The dictators come in and they take over the media, and that's what he's talking about.
This is how you would do it.
And the first step is not to just run in and take over the media. The first one is diminish the existing media
and discredit them.
To demean them and discredit them. And that's what. And so I just had to kick a guy off my Facebook page yesterday because he was saying you fake news types, fake news. I go, okay, tell me what's fake news. Obviously couldn't quantify it. I doubt, you know, it's just another, you know, pro-Trump snowflake whining about coverage they don't like.
They're pro-Trump snowflakes? I thought snowflakes were the opposite.
Oh, no, the pro-Trump guys are. They're snowflake. They melt like that.
Okay, we need another definition thing. Eric, what's a snowflake?
No, it's anyone who melts in the face of some criticism or some things.
I thought that was reserved for the left.
I really did too.
But look, they start. I think the right started it, but certainly all the people who have to stomp out of football games because they can't.
On Weekend Update this past Saturday.
Yeah.
He said, who are these snowflakes that can't say? And I thought, I think his reference was to right-wing snowflakes, but who can't take, no, Earl, you can't have, you know, 42 guns.
You can't
guns.
Shoot someone with six bullets. Use your words.
Wasn't that a great line?
Snowflakes are all different shapes and sizes, but they all melt at some point, right?
I got it. let's talk about Wrigley Field for a second, you guys. So there have been numerous lawsuits against baseball teams, including the Cubs and the White Sox this year, because balls go into the stands and hit people. There are 1,700 people per year injured at baseball games, presumably from baseballs and bats that fly out of the hands of Addison Russell. So,
Addison Russell alone, 1,700.
So shouldn't they just extend the netting as far as is necessary? In Japan, I'm told, it goes all the way down to the outfield. In Chicago, it doesn't go much past the dugout, and that's where these people are getting injured. So there's a minimum $50,000 civil suit against the Cubs. They want money for this guy who may lose his eye, and they also want the net to go further. I was at the game yesterday. I was looking through the net, I think, through the rain and the cold and the fog. But I don't know why they're reticent to do it.
To me, it's a no-brainer.
Isn't it, though?
I mean, why? You want to go. You want to have a great time. You're at a baseball game. People get distracted very easily. You're having a good time. Why put yourself at risk?
I went to a game with my wife this summer, a couple of games. In one, she talked about, you know, watching, and then the other one, we were in a skybox, and she said, it's so nice to be up here because I don't have to worry about the balls or the bats.
Really? No.
And when she said
Steve
this,
slowly put his mitt away.
Right. I know.
Yeah, right, Sharon, you're right. We don't have to do that.
But when she said that, I looked at her because it has never occurred to me ever at a game. I've been to hundreds of games to be afraid.
With your kids? You brought them when they were young, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've always been alert. I've always been watching. But it's never occurred to me to be afraid or worried about it happening.
Really?
Because I'm watching the game and I know what I...
What do you think is going to happen if a 100-mile-an-hour foul ball is coming at you? Play it out.
I catch it, and the crowd cheers, and then I, you know...
Seriously.
I freak out and go...
I know. I mean, literally, even if you've made your best effort...
No, you're right. It can happen, but I'm saying just between Sharon and me, the difference was I'm watching the game, I think, and I'm saying it was never a worry of mine. It didn't occur to me that other people actually sat with some level of anxiety at the games to do it. By the way, I've caught line drive foul balls before Wrigley Field. Yeah, I have.
Send me the video.
In his teeth.
So have
my
you?
My thumb swelled up from
that
it.
That was before videos were invented.
Yeah.
Who invited her?
Was it a wiffle
Why
ball?
Is she here?
Scott, you go to hockey games, right? You're always looking at a Blackhawks game through a netting.
Yeah, well, you're looking at it through glass, which is different.
Well,
but the netting,
I mean,
there has to be
a
reason, and this is salient, I promise. Walmart for years had a lawyer. His only job, he was in Denver, Colorado. He's a friend of a friend. His only job was to defend them in cases where paint buckets fell on their heads. I'm serious. It cost more to redo the stores than to pay out settlements for people who, because the paint cans were too high and they get hit and... There you go.
Wow. This sounds like the show, the Pinto story.
Exactly.
Right?
I'm wondering if this isn't the same thing because, you know, it seems like a simple fix. You put the netting down the first and third base lines. Everyone's protected.
The netting can't be that expensive.
It can't be, but I think people don't like it.
I don't think you should ask.
If you're looking through it directly, it's one thing, I'm assuming, than if you're looking through it at an angle.
Where you see more of it.
And that's where it would really come into play. Everybody if you're sitting down the line looking through.
You're imagining, I suspect, a black nylon net. How about a fishing line nylon net, which is clearer, maybe more reflective, maybe more see-through capability? I think that's brilliant.
As you will.
I'm seeing a patent here.
Think of it. The John Williams fishing line baseball net. I want to ask you guys about this. Bill Clinton almost lost his job for a relationship with an intern. Bill O'Reilly lost his TV show. Bill Cosby lost his career. Harvey Weinstein has lost, it appears, his wife, his company, his life. The question to me isn't maybe when are they going to learn, these men. I don't think they're capable of it. I don't think it's something that they can learn. I think the question is, when are we all going to learn to either institute better personal or professional safeguards for people, or once we find them, to rat them out sooner? I am mad at almost every one of these stories this week, and Steve is mad at me for that.
I am mad at you for that. I don't like the... You know, I didn't mean to sound mad at you yesterday.
You were mad at me, and you sounded mad at
me. I'm sorry that I did sound that...
I think it was honest.
I wasn't mad
Mom
at you.
Mom and Dad are fighting.
I'm frustrated when these things happen, and now all of a sudden we're naming names. Oh, and, you know...
Jessica Chastain.
I don't even know the stories associated with these people, but Matt Damon did
Matt
this,
Damon,
and such and such did this, and this guy must have known and he didn't come forward. Pull back. The bad guy here is Harvey Weinstein. Let me tell you my own story without divulging. I mean, I got a call once 20 years ago, and it was about someone else in radio who was a boss, a guy. And it was a woman who called me, and she said, "Hey, do you know, is this radio station hiring someone?" I said, "I don't know." She goes, "Well, you know, because such and such took me out for drinks, and well, you know how such and such is, and he told me there'd be a job in it for me." Okay? Implication is clearly this guy hit on this woman, may have had sex with her, I don't know, with the idea that there's a job coming. Is it my responsibility to go to that guy's boss and say, "Hey, I just heard that this guy had some bad behavior"? And if this guy gets discovered 15 years later, and this woman says, "Oh, I talked to Steve Bertrand about it," does that make me the bad guy here now?
So answer your own question.
No, it doesn't.
You have zero responsibility to anybody for anything in this story.
And I think that if there wasn't a crime committed or an attack made, if I didn't have evidence of a crime, I don't think I am responsible for risking my job by calling it out.
That's your scenario. But I don't think that's generally what we're talking about here. Mostly the criticism has been of the women who knew about it or were hit upon or even signed settlements. here's the analogy I've used this week. Tell me if this is apt. Kim, you go first. Right. If I'm walking down the street and somebody robs me on Michigan Avenue, and they've been there all week, don't I have an obligation to tell people, hey, there's a guy on Michigan Avenue who's been robbing people, whether I got robbed or not? That's why I'm mad at people who know and don't say. But what's your reaction to this story this week?
Well, obviously, being a woman, I'm outraged. It's horrible. It's just another, I don't know. The thing that upsets me about Harvey Weinstein, all these people, is that it always happens. It doesn't matter. It's happening anywhere and everywhere. They just happen to have a lot of power and have gotten called out on it. How do we change the culture? How do we change the work environment? How do we change this? I don't know what the answer is. And our, you know, our president has been accused of it, and he's still the president.
You know, I didn't put him in my little litany of people.
But he needs to be on the list.
But it's the exact same power play. When you listen to the Billy Bush tape, he says, when you're a star, you get away with it. Isn't it great? And Billy Bush is laughing. And Billy Bush loses his job.
Right.
And all the Bills lose their jobs in this story.
I think the difference is we're seeing it on the other side as a collective. We're seeing a collective of women or men, but each of the individuals, or before the on the other side, on the previous side, it's all an individual interaction. And so it's easy for us to say, if there are 50 women here, everyone should have acted in concert.
You're right.
When it actually happened 50 different times.
It's very personal. It's very individual. You listen to the tape of Weinstein with that Italian-Filipino model, Umbra, something like that.
Right.
And oh my God, is that...
That was part of the New Yorker.
Dangerous. Yeah. Listen to the tape if you haven't. Let's not insert it all here, Elif, but let's put a link to it because it's telling.
Why yesterday you touched my priest.
Oh, please, I'm sorry. Just come on. I'm used to that.
Are you used to that?
Here's my take on this is that, yeah, I mean, maybe some of these people should have come forward, but the people to be mad at here are the people who are in charge in these organizations who know about this stuff, who have orchestrated these settlements. How many settlements? He had a bunch of them.
I think.
And they're at Fox News. They had a bunch of settlements. The boards of directors, they know about this stuff. There are cultures in these companies where people do know. We even had a situation in our paper 15 years ago or so where somebody was well known for being predatory. And yet nobody really did anything about it.
You know, that's a very interesting analogy because he was one of our favorite authors and columnists in this town for years. And when it hit the fan, a lot of people were not surprised. I was. I didn't know anything about it. And I considered him a professional friend. You're making a face.
I never liked him.
Well, maybe that's why.
Ever.
I mean, I think that's part of the reason people didn't like or trust him.
I'm mad at the people who knew about it in the corporate structure. I'm also mad at like NBC for punting on Ronan Farrow's story.
Yeah.
I'm mad at the district attorney in New York City who had that tape that the New Yorker had, and they declined to press charges on it.
That's the question. Was there a crime there? I mean—
He's an ass.
It sounds like
what's
an assault. He admits to grabbing her by the breast. That's an assault.
Well, and there's still, I mean, Hollywood is this insular, and they tend to protect their own. I mean, you talk about bringing Affleck or Matt Damon's name up. It does, because apparently, allegedly, they worked very hard to kill a story. Saturday Night Live, this is, if Weinstein had given this kind of money and this kind of support to Republicans, you would have, the opening monologue would have been about this. They didn't mention word one about this story. And so there is...
Well, they had their plate full, but I think it was conspicuously...
Yeah.
When I watched Saturday Night Live, I didn't think about it. The next day, when I read the criticism, I went,
Yeah, it belonged in the Weekend Update at least.
At least.
And we'll see what the test will be. They have a show this week or are they off?
They do have a show this week.
Yeah, so we'll test, see if they'll go for it. Well, and I didn't even know that joke on 30 Rock... From several years ago. Jenna says, I don't get any credit. I've turned down sexual intercourse with him.
I don't understand this.
Didn't everyone?
Raise your hand so the people listening can see. But wasn't it a common knowledge that this guy was a heel all along? I mean,
not me.
Really,
Harvey Weinstein?
Yeah.
I didn't care.
I didn't know.
I think the joke was, for instance, when they did the Oscar nominees one year and they had the pictures of five women up there, and the joke was, here are five women in Hollywood who no longer have to
pretend to be
sexually attracted to Harvey Weinstein. I thought the joke was just that he's not a real attractive guy who is very powerful.
I'd see an award show and the celebrities, the stars would sort of go out of their way. He was like the Kim Jong-un or the Donald Trump of Hollywood. They would go out of their way to say, thank you, Harvey.
Referred to him as God.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, okay.
In her
sure,
thank
sure,
you
sure.
speech.
And but she also says she knew none of it.
Right. But I'm saying that that was the aura that he,
absolutely.
That's the perceived aura that
right.
he had.
Right, but when you're the receiver of that and people continue to give it to it, I mean, the implication is that you want it.
It's
and you
say,
know that it's...
Don't mention me anymore.
Yeah, you right. know good. Those right. people know that they need to do those things. That's the way I always saw Harvey
Weinstein.
So, Kim,
Weinstein. What's the answer? You said, how's the culture going to change? Is the culture going to change? Is this a moment here? Are we going to get... Is there consciousness raising? Or are all the examples that... John,
or are we just
off.
Burned out?
Is this just another one, and in 5 years we'll go, remember, this is the moment now.
Not, I think we will. I think,
think this is a big moment.
I meant it when I said it. I don't think it's when will these guys learn. I don't think sociopaths or whatever they are capable of learning. This is part of their DNA.
Well, and I think a lot of problems with some of these men, they have everything. They have money. They have power. They have everything in the world that money can buy and more. So what are they looking for? And, you know, do they just twist their brains and try to accomplish something that nobody else
can?
Oh,
yeah. She wasn't interested in that woman.
Well, even if it's legal, illegal, morally
he
right
said,
or
after
wrong.
5 minutes, you'll never see me again. But she was just another chink in his belt.
Right. And don't ruin your whole life because
for 5 minutes, it'll ruin your life if you don't give me what I want. So here I have been critical this week of these women who don't tell these stories until now. Is that unfair of me in your estimation?
I think it is.
Yes.
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 Absolutely.
As a victim of abuse myself, I can tell you that the cycle of abuse, and that's all this is. This is, there's nothing pretty. He wasn't like Randy. You try to use all these other cute words. This guy was scum. This guy was a sexual predator and an abuser. And as a victim of abuse, I can tell you that the culture of abuse is not to talk about it. So to blame the women is ridiculous. To blame the victims... There's a culture that I come out and then they're going to say, well, you know, she also had these relationships. She had a one night stand with Ben Affleck. Like, who didn't?
What was she doing in a hotel room?
Exactly. They're going to make her the victim. No, these are victims, and to blame them is preposterous and frankly quite heinous.
I agree with you, Scott, because is that what we say about the kids who were just playing basketball at Catholic churches, that the priests came up and abused these kids? They didn't say anything either.
But
I mean, it's the same situation.
Sandusky in Penn State was protected by Joe Paterno for a decade. He knew that guy was taking little boys into the shower. I mean,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm just saying to protect the institution. I'm sorry, you touched a nerve. I'm going to
Scott, I'm sorry. I didn't know all of this.
And the Sandusky example is a good one. I think John is probably right that you're not going to be able to rehabilitate guys like Sandusky, but you have to rehabilitate guys like Paterno, the people who did know, who's not a predator himself, but who is in a responsible position to put a stop to it.
I will say the risk of peril, there is a difference between adult women maintaining their silence and, you know, prepubescent boys
children.
Or girls. I mean, there is a difference in that, and that the adult women might be more likely to...
Steve, some of these
no,
so-called
not,
adult women are young 20-something girls. I mean, really.
Don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that they should have at all. I'm just saying that there is a bit of a
difference. I get that distinction, but you listen to that tape, and that girl, that woman, that young model, she's I've got to be early 20s. I mean, she might be late
maybe
teens.
Maybe 19, right.
Yeah, is so vulnerable.
So to answer your question, this is not the moment, but I think what we're seeing instead are bricks. And I think Bill Cosby was a brick in the wall. I think this is a brick or two in the wall. So I think the wall is being built over a series of these things.
It's time for our... Scott, thank you for that.
Sure.
Kim, I appreciate your candor on all of this, too. There's a lot on the table, and we need to move on. We do our recommendations at the end of each week's podcast. That's something that we are reading, watching, listening to, or consuming that we think you should, too. Steve, go first.
I'm hanging out in post-World War II Europe. I didn't realize it till last night, but I've been watching the show The Collection, which is an Amazon show, and it's set in one of the fashion houses just after World War II when Paris tries to reestablish itself as the center of fashion. I'm not recommending it. It's okay. But then I'm also reading this book by John Lawton, who I have not known before. It's called Friends and Traitors, and apparently he's written a series of these books involving Inspector Troy, an Inspector Troy novel, and it's in post-World War II. It's in pre, during, and mostly post-World War II London, and this guy is sort of getting into the Soviet spy rings and will expose them. I'm early in the book, but I'm liking that a lot. So the name of the book I'm recommending is Friends and Traitors by John Lawton.
Kim, what do you want to pass along?
All right. Well, I like to talk food. I love restaurants. So I just went to a great restaurant last weekend called Barrio, right on Kinsey. It's one of the Siena Tavern restaurants, but it's Japanese-Mexican fusion. Really fun, really a cool place, great food, lots of like plates to share. It's a fun place to go with a lot of people.
Is it the small plates?
Small, you know, you get two tacos or you can add tacos, but then they have, you know, raw fish and big plates. So it's a matter of whatever, however you want to course it out.
Yeah, interesting. Bari.
It's a lot of fun.
How about you?
The teriyaki burritos. Excellent. No, no. Sounds good, though. My recommendation is one of the top podcasts in the country. It was number one when I last looked. I'm not sure it still is. It's called Dirty John, and it's from the L.A. Times. They've done this thing where reporter Christopher Gofford has gone and he's pulled apart the story of Deborah Newell Stewart, who married this guy she found online, John Meehan. And John Meehan turns out to be an incredible con man and very dangerous person. It's a six-part series. It's sort of like it's almost like a noir novel. And it's a sort of a new foray of journalism in the podcast realm. It's like an audiobook almost.
Different than Serial, how?
Different than Serial in the way that it's told. It's not really so much of a mystery as it just kind of spins this story out. And it's again, it's from a newspaper company. In fact, our company. Now that I think of it, but it's really well done. Again, it's a fascinating listen. So it's called Dirty John.
Two things here. Firstly, I'm going to bring it up. This is a cartoon essay I did a number of years ago when the NFL, punching wives and beating children things was coming to a head.
Was all the rage.
It's called.
That's nothing now, right?
Yeah, I know. Really,
that's just
luck.
De rigueur. But it's the cartoon essay I wrote, and I think I was on your show, if I'm not mistaken, called "The Beatings Never Really Stop," and it just talks about. It was the first time ever I'd publicly spoken about being physically abused as a kid, and so it's still out there. It's had millions and millions and millions of shares, which has been. And it seems to have helped
the
a lot.
The cartoon itself.
Yes.
So if I Google
"The Beatings Never Really Stop."
Yeah. And we can put that. It's very powerful, and we should put it on our page. So.
Scott, is it the one with the dark? It's one you drew. Is
yes,
that what
yeah.
You're saying? And it's kind of. I think I
a lot of darkness, a lot of fists, a lot of sadness. It's not a pick me up, but it was hard. It's probably the hardest thing I ever did. In hindsight, I'm wondering if I'd do it again, knowing what happened, what it dredged up, because it was pretty tough.
And maybe it helped people. Maybe it,
it helped a ton. I did a thing at Litfest. It was sold out, and one guy. This one moment, if I may. Briefly, he's a typical Southside Irishman. He was massive. And he starts telling a story. And there were no questions. These were all statements when people raised their hands. And he just told the story of abuse and how he came out of it and where he is now. And there wasn't a dry eye in the house. We were all just sobbing. So it has helped, especially men. Because, like I said earlier, men, we're taught not to talk about this stuff. And I'll just leave it at that.
Huh. I was at Mark Baser's stand-up talk show at The Hideout the other night, and he interviewed Rich Cohen, who you may have read before. His latest book is The Chicago Cubs, Story of a Curse. I don't think it's a great title because everybody kind of knows the story about the curse. It's more just a book about the Chicago Cubs, and it's anecdote rich. It just tells great stories about the teams, the players. And I think we all know a lot about the Cubs in this town. I didn't know a lot of this. And he spends a lot of time at the beginning of the book talking about the 1906, 07, 08 Cubs, the ones that were the greatest team with Tinkers, Evers, Chance, Mordecai Brown. And some of the stuff he tells there is just spectacular. I mean, it's got the trappings of a movie, the first 100 pages of this book. And then he kind of very quickly gets you to last year and tells you the story in a way that you wouldn't predict. And it's not all about the damn billy goat, although it's in there too. I'm really enjoying it. I'm almost done with it, but it's The Chicago Cubs, Story of a Curse by Rich Cohen. If you like baseball, the Cubs are just good storytelling. I'm recommending Rich Cohen's latest. And that's this week's podcast, The Mincing Rascals. Hey, Ben, thanks for helping us out. Ben Cortez is our engineer. Elif Garris is on the other side of the glass. She's our producer. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to The Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.